This is Issues 2020. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County Health Director Adrian Byrne. Welcome to Issues 2020.
Thank you. Good morning.
And if our listeners can tell, we're doing this over the phone because we're not allowing visitors at our radio station now and haven't been for quite a while. But you've been at ground zero in Sedgwick County during the coronavirus pandemic, along with several local health officials. And I'm going to guess that you've never seen anything quite like this.
That is true. You know, we have had measles outbreaks. We had H1N1 in 2008 and 9, but very difficult to get prepared for something like COVID-19 because it has been a moving target since day one, with new information popping up sometimes on the hour.
That was my next question. Was the county prepared at some level or any level for any type of health crisis this big?
Yeah, well, I will say yes on many levels because we do have preparedness in Sedgwick County. And so we, you know, go through exercises to, you know, practice to have like what currently we have a drive-through testing. And so we have what's called pods, point of dispensing, so that if we need to do vaccinations or testing, that we are ready to do that. And every day, other health departments, and particularly medium-sized and large that have epidemiologists on staff, they're always monitoring what is occurring in our country, what is occurring in other states, and particularly those states around us, to be aware of any potential threat to Kansas and to Sedgwick County. So that is something that we do have staff doing. And, you know, don't forget that we have a lot of reportable diseases in Sedgwick County and everywhere. And so if there is a if there's pertussis, which is whooping cough, or measles, chickenpox, there's a whole lot of reportable diseases. And when we get a call on that, because we get all of those, we're notified of all of those, because then our EPIs need to do investigations with calling the main person and finding out who their close contacts were, so we then can get in contact with them and see if they need to be quarantined.
I don't think they did that when I was in high school. When I was a junior in a high school, I did two-a-day practices for about a week with the whooping cough. I think I may have given it to the entire team. But those were the days. Hey, listen,
yes.
But how would you describe this, actually? Once-in-a-lifetime type of, by the size and scope, once-in-a-generation? What do you think?
I don't know. It's being more compared to like 1918, but the difference in 1918 with the Spanish flu is that we didn't have what we do now in regard to public health. However, that, you know, outbreak, and it was devastating because it killed so many people, but in 1918, it showed that social distancing works because there were areas that began to utilize some of those tactics, and it didn't spread as much. So, you know, we have learned some things throughout the years. We have had other, you know, viruses, diseases that we didn't have immunities to. We've had SARS, and again, the most recent was the H1N1 flu, where it was a new strain, a novel strain, just like this corona, COVID-19 is, that none of us had natural immunities built up for. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I want to go back to something very basic. And if you would, can you explain to me in the simplest terms you can exactly what the coronavirus is?
So coronavirus is that there are a number of coronaviruses, and in humans, there are, I believe, 7 coronaviruses that we are able to get. And the common cold is one of those. And then the sudden acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, was another one, as was MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, because that's where it began. So there are other coronaviruses that have been around for, gosh, way over 50 years. So coronaviruses in and of themselves aren't new. It's just that this COVID-19 that originated in China in December of 2019, which is why it's called COVID-19, because that's when the origination was of identifying this virus. So that is kind of the short history of COVID-19.
Okay. Is this a plot by the Chinese? Or
I mean, that's been brought up. I know. They were pretty devastated by it as well in their country. So it is just a new strain that is thought to have jumped from animal to human, and that created this new strain that we haven't dealt with before and don't have immunities built up for. Yeah.
Well, what are the symptoms? I mean, sometimes I guess there are no symptoms, but what are the usual symptoms?
The symptoms that were identified in the beginning were cough, fever, usually over 100.3 or 4, and difficulty breathing in cases that were more severe. Now, since then, because we're still learning, we're learning still about this, you know, every day as it evolves, that some people will report having mild, like, cold symptoms. Other people report having somewhat flu-ish symptoms. But for the most part, we're just seeing a dry type cough. Some have a fever, because fevers can, one person might show more of a fever than maybe an older adult. It can depend upon the time of the day. So our fevers can somewhat fluctuate, but there's been some sort of respiratory upper or lower. And then as it progresses, or those cases that are more severe have difficulty breathing.
Now, is a person contagious before the symptoms show up?
Well, they're still learning on that, the belief is yes, that the contact investigations are supposed to start 2 days prior to symptoms. So when we hear from a doctor or a lab, because we're always alerted as a health department that there is someone has tested positive for COVID-19, we contact that person and find out who their close contacts are. And a close contact is considered anyone within 6 feet for more than 10 minutes. So we find out who all of their close contacts were. And if they're working, we'll call their employer, their supervisor, to verify that that was, just to make sure that they have their dates right. And then go about an investigation of not only who did they come in contact with that they may have exposed, but trying to trace who they came in contact with where they may have gotten COVID-19 from.
Now, again, but the giving it or going transmitted from one person to another, do we have to cough on something? Do we have to? We are cleaning surfaces like crazy around here.
And that is a good thing. And again, you know, additional information came from Center for Disease Control and Prevention this weekend. So when we think we have it figured out as far as just how far it transmits or surfaces, then new information is coming out. But we know for sure that it is transmitted through coughing or sneezing, and that primarily the main way in the beginning believed was primarily through droplets, where someone would sneeze or cough and then it goes into the air and then droplets then fall to the surface, whether it's a table or, I mean, whatever it might be. And so that's why it's so important for people to cover their cough with a tissue or into their elbow or shoulder. Now, that doesn't necessarily contain all of the spreading that's occurring, but just like with a common cold or flu, it probably all the spittle that's going out isn't it totally contained, but it really helps contain it versus spreading. So most people, it has been believed, would come in contact with a surface that those droplets have landed on, or the person coughs into their or sneezes into their hand, picks up a pencil or touches a surface, someone else comes along, since we know that the COVID-19 can remain alive on varying surfaces up to, I believe it's 48, 72 hours, depending upon what it is. Someone touches that and then touches their eyes, nose, or mouth, and then in our body that virus goes. Now, as of this weekend, Center for Disease Control, through their scientists and continuing to just find out more about this, are now saying that when someone coughs or sneezes, that it projects way beyond 6 feet and remains in the air a little bit until it disperses, and that it can possibly be like tracked in on dirt. So we're finding that it's staying on a lot of different materials and surfaces. We're obviously doing something right here in Sedgwick County and in other places around the country. Others, it's more of a challenge to get it under control because it just got out of control so quickly. But that social distancing, and I read an article, one of the articles I read last week, I really liked how it said, you know what, it might help if we look at this as physical distancing. And when I read physical distancing, I thought, you know, that conjures up an image in my mind in a much more concrete way than social distancing is, even though that's the term that we use. But physical distancing of staying away at least 6 feet from someone and keeping the hands away from the eyes, nose, and mouth is just critical because we haven't found any information that it, you know, can somehow absorb through our skin. So we have to give it a way into our body through our eyes, nose, or mouth.
So how effective are masks?
Well, it depends, and so many people have asked that, you know, since the beginning, and the guidance has definitely changed a lot on personal protective equipment, or what people will often hear someone just say PPE. It's personal protective equipment, and doctors and nurses, they are very familiar with that because you'll see those surgical masks that people wear are really to keep our germs in. So there's not a whole lot of protection that people will get just from wearing the surgical type masks, but that's not to say that it doesn't provide a little bit of a barrier versus nothing. But then there's an N95 respirator mask that people need to be fitted for to make sure it has an absolutely snug fit, because that is to keep things from the outside getting in.
Okay. You're listening to Issues 2020 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County Health Director Adrian Byrne. Is that all in the mask? You sounded like you might have something else to say about it.
Well, in the beginning, well, there's a couple different things because there's a shortage. There's been such a shortage of supplies of personal protective equipment throughout the country, and there's not even enough N95 masks for our first responders and people in our medical community to feel secure that they'll have one next week. So the county has been working tirelessly. I mean, I've been very proud of just how hard, you know, involving our county manager. I mean, at all levels, they're just overturning every stone I can't even tell you how many vendors that we've called, but, you know, 80, I mean, there's just so many vendors to try to find out if we can get N95 masks. They're very difficult to come from. I believe in the beginning it was related to China being on a lockdown because some of these supplies come from China. And even surgical masks are, you know, in short supply. And so what some people have started to do around the community is make masks. So now there's guidance out about making masks. Like, you need to use cotton, and there needs to be at least 2-ply. And it's important to, like, tie behind the head because it needs to be as tight of a fit as possible so that if we sneeze or cough, that it doesn't come out. So in the beginning, it was just sick people. If you have symptoms, only sick people really need to wear masks. Well, the more that we've learned about COVID-19 from Center for Disease Control in places like National Institute of Health, is that there are some asymptomatic people, which means people that are not showing symptoms of COVID-19 walking around that are actually carriers. Now, it's not totally clear how much they can transmit because you really can't. It's very difficult to do a case contact investigation when you don't know who you came in contact with because they weren't sick. But people are being tested in some parts of the country, like New York, that are not ill. And in New York, they have found that out of every 1,000 asymptomatic people, one is a carrier. So there could be people that are carriers that aren't ill. So then that's when CDC came out with the recommendation over a week ago that everyone could wear a mask. Now, that definitely needs to be in places like New York and, you know, where they're densely populated and might have more of a struggle with maintaining adequate physical distance if they're out. But Kansas Department of Health and Environment, our state health department, followed up with that same recommendation last week. So is it absolutely necessary? I wouldn't say that, you know, everyone absolutely has to do that. But under any abundance of caution, definitely if someone is ill, they need to, or not feeling quite right, they need to wear some type of mask so that if they do sneeze or cough or either even talking with someone, that the germs aren't coming out. But even if people aren't ill and they're going out and about in the community, it just helps spread that protection.
Who is most at risk for COVID-19?
The highest risk population are those over 60 with other chronic illnesses, diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, asthma, and really any age that has a compromised immune system for any reason. So we are showing, I mean, it really can, no one is immune to having severe effects to COVID-19, but all the data so far are showing that that age group that is most severely affected is over 60 and definitely 80 and over.
Well, you know, we've had some stories recently about a higher concentration under African-American communities and places like that. Is that a matter of physiology, or is that a matter of where they are and how close they're coming in contact with other people, maybe their job or something like that?
I'm not totally sure, and we're just Sedgwick County numbers of people that we've testing, and we're going to start to be able to increase that, but I don't know that we have enough data in Sedgwick County yet to really explain that. But, you know, oftentimes there are populations and groups within any city that may not have the same type of access to health care or physicians, just to services as other people do. And that could be one of those reasons where there's just not always an equitable, there's not always equity across the board in regards to what we have access to. And maybe it can also attribute to where we live and how much we have access to a full grocery store that has fruits and vegetables and just access to healthy foods. And income also plays a factor.
You know, I am 100% with you and convinced that this stay-at-home thing is the way to go and the way to make this work. But, you know, there's, I don't know how you are, but there's a mental health aspect to this health crisis.
Absolutely.
People get in some pretty dark moods when they have to stay at home all the time. Talk about
absolutely.
That a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that is extremely difficult. And when I've done some research on the effects of isolation and quarantine, you know, there's been studies that show that sometimes there's lingering effects two, three years after, just because of, you know, particularly if it's not an experience someone has ever had before and you are isolated from other people. And sometimes, like in your own household, if you're ill, you need to stay away from other people, like in your own room, and not use the same bathroom if someone's lucky enough to have more than one bathroom. And so just that, the isolation from your loved ones and then being out and about around people can be extremely difficult. So it's really important for people to be have ways to stay in contact with people. So that's where that social connection, and not so much getting onto social media, but finding ways to talk to people on the phone, do some video with people, just to have some kind of connection, and knowing that this is going to pass. It seems like it's, 6 weeks has seemed like a year. I mean, it's just exhausting for everybody and quite a trying period. It's draining. There's a lot of anxiety in our community with people that don't normally experience anxiety. There are a lot more people experiencing anxiety because of the unknown, and it's just changing all the time. And it's hard to feel like we have control over life, it being normal, because it's not normal right now. Mm-hmm. So it's just important for people to hang in there, knowing we will get past this, and, journaling, writing down what we're experiencing every day can help, but also finding a way to reach out and keep in touch with some people. ComCare does have a line, 660-1111. They still have their crisis line for people in crisis feeling suicidal, but also the 1111 is a new line just for anyone struggling with how hard all this is right now.
And you also have the 211 United Way of the Plains helping with all the other aspects of this thing.
We do. I'm glad you brought that up because, again, we are expanding our testing, loosening up on testing criteria. So we have been going by KDHE, and it's been pretty stringent who could get tested. But even they are loosening that up now. And so if anyone feels ill, believes they have been in contact with someone that has been ill and have some type of symptoms, respiratory symptoms, fever, if they call 211, 211 will screen them and then connect them with our nurse triage line, and we will ask some more questions, and if they're ill, get them set up to be tested.
How will we know when it's time to go back to normal?
We are starting to look at that and strategize, but at this point, there are others before us that have already hit their peak, and so we are hoping to learn from them. We may get to a point where we don't quite hit this massive peak. We may hit a point where we just plateau and continue that plateau with those certain amount of numbers, cases that we get every day, every week for a while. That's kind of what we're hoping for, so that we don't overwhelm our hospitals and anyone that needs beds, which there are plenty of those now, can get those. So a plan is being looked at, is how do we gradually get back to normal?
So what is the future? Is the ultimate a vaccine of some sort?
It is. The National Institute of Health and others have been working on a vaccine. I'm still hearing that it could be 2021, but that is definitely in the works, as other things are.
All right. We've got to stop now. We're out of time, but I sure appreciate your time. Let me express this, too, for you in the healthcare industry and what you're doing, and the first responders and all the medical people, just a big salute from all of us out here. You're doing a terrific job on a really tough, tough mission. And so,
thank you, and thank the community for all they're doing to help spread this.
All right, thanks.
Stop the spread.
Thanks for sharing some good information with us today. Our guest, Sedgwick County Health Director Adrian Byrne. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2020. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.